How does it measure? Trying to follow your footsteps.
The mood in which we practice the Krishna consciousness would be a sense of urgency to go back to God as quickly as possible.
Any other points?
If someone doesn't completely finish the Krishna mantra, they'll take very long.
Any other points?
Time has no influence on spirit but on matter, and hence there is no age for retirement or in spiritual devotion service.
So if someone is on the material platform, if someone ages, then that is not an impediment for their Krishna consciousness. They become more enthusiastic as time goes by to serve Krishna, so they don't get held back by their material body. Just like Vidura was quite old, but he did not feel any impediment in his enthusiasm to serve Krishna. Any other points?
Remembrance of the Lord and his personal presence, his presence is not different.
Yeah, last point.
On the verse 2, we discussed about always remember Krishna, never forget him. And we talked about sadhana, this practice which leads to sadhya. We go vritti and nishedha. We discover vritti and nishedha.
Yeah.
Vritti and
nishedha. Yeah. Okay. The do is the do. That's good. Anything else?
There is a saying in Telugu, Mokkai Vangandi Mane Vangandu. That is, when somebody is tender, if you teach in Krishna consciousness, then when he becomes old, he takes it naturally. But somebody who, when he's young, is not taken, later on he takes it, but maybe takes it differently.
So it was also nice in the second verse, it describes how when Uddhava was a child, his mother would call him to come and take breakfast. But he was so absorbed in his play with the dolls of Krishna that he did not feel any attraction even to food. Good point. Any other points?
When the seed of devotional service is planted, like the Bhakti Lata, the creeper of devotional service is planted, you have to protect it with Shravanam and Kirtanam in order to for it to grow.
Why?
And you have to surround it with the fence of association, devotee association, or else the mandal of the big effect is going to be destroyed.
Destroyed. That's good.
Sometimes the symptoms of devotees also can be imitated, like 8 sattvika bhavas that the ears coming from being shielded. But we have to see we have to judge one's advancement according to the 9 symptoms of bhava. It's the do not waste time, perseverance, attachment, pride, things, great hope, attachment to the calling, the holy places.
The Lord performs his pastimes. Nice point. Good. Anything else?
A pure devotee like Uddhava can be in the material, Kriti can be in the material world, but his thoughts can be in the spiritual world and associated with Krishna.
Very good. So in the sixth verse we saw, in the final verse of the section we covered on Saturday night, then it is explained by Prabhupada in the purport that Uddhava was absorbed in his consciousness in Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka, in relationship with his eternal relationship with Krishna, in his Swarup. And he brought his consciousness down into this realm in order to speak to Vidura. So although his consciousness was in the spiritual realm with Krishna, he came down into this world in order to preach Krishna consciousness, and this is what this is the activity of the Nitya Siddhas, the pure devotees of Krishna. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that the process for us to reach this level of Krishna consciousness, which is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness, love of Godhead, prema bhakti, is that we follow the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna. And by hearing and chanting about Krishna continuously, then kirtaniyaha sada hari, continuous hearing and chanting about Krishna, we can elevate our consciousness to such an extent that our consciousness can actually enter into the spiritual world and actually contact Krishna, get direct association with Krishna. And by having that direct association with Krishna, then we can feel fully satisfied in our eternal relationship with Krishna. And we may bring our if we still have a material body, we may bring our consciousness back into this material body just in order to perform preaching activities and so on and so forth. But actually, a pure devotee, a nichasiddha, like Srila Prabhupada, like Uddhava, like all the associates of Krishna, their consciousness, even though they appear to be in this world, but factually speaking, by consciousness, they're eternally associating with Krishna in the spiritual world. So this is an example of perfect Krishna consciousness. The stage of prema bhakti, or the stage of perfection in Krishna consciousness.
When the Nityasiddha Deva is designed, do they have a complete Sachidan Vigraha or they are in the material body?
It depends.
How do they appear and how do they disappear?
Yeah, so it depends on the situation. It is described, Prabhupada describes this point. He says, for example, we saw Srila Prabhupada had a material body.
Yes.
But obviously he was a Nityasiddha. So simultaneously, he's... for the Nitya Bhava living entities, or the conditioned souls, their swarup, in other words, the jiva enters into this material body, and the swarup is not fully blown or fully manifest. So it says the jiva is 1/10,000 the size of the tip of a hair, so it's like a seed. And that seed, when it develops love of Godhead, it fructifies into the swarup, or the eternal form. Of the living entity's eternal relationship with Krishna's eternal form. So Prabhupada's eternal form, for example, was fully manifest. He was fully conscious of that eternal form, but yet he entered in this world in the material form in order to. So Prabhupada explains that for the pure devotee, that body is actually spiritual because it is 100% used in Krishna's service, so it is not material. But still, it is made of the material energy, just like the form of the deity, right? It is material, in a sense, but it is fully spiritual. It is not material, but it is made of the material elements like that. So, in terms of the Prabhupada says, it is like a pure gold box and a gold-plated box. So when you look at them externally, they both appear to be gold, but one is gold all the way through, pure gold, and the other one is gold plated. So Prabhupada gives example, a pure devotee, he may appear in this world and he's like a gold plated box. His body is spiritual, but it may be material, whereas Krishna's form is pure gold, purely spirit. And similarly, when Krishna appears, then his associates may appear and they also have a pure form because it is their swarup, it is their eternal relationship with Krishna. Or they may appear and they may have that. Like that, so.
Well, why can't they appear in the spiritual form itself?
They can if it's in relationship to Krishna's lila maya.
No, I went out and I came late, Prabhu. I'm so sorry. I wanted not to come inside the class, but I did not want to miss the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
I wanted to sit in the temple room and read the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
Cold.
But I think next time you will be on time, isn't it?
It is like a punishment for that.
Yeah, punishment is coming, don't worry. Just wait till I mark your exam. Don't be late, huh? So, the point is that in the past times of the Lord, then the eternal associates will have their spiritual form like that, because that is their swarup. So like Radharani, Mother Yashoda, like that is their eternal form. So that spirit, there's no need for a material form. But then in terms of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, then Rupa and Sanatana Swami, yeah, they may take on a material form like that, in that example, like that. So I don't know exactly how it works, but it can be that the eternal associates, when they form comes in the spiritual world, in terms of their relationship to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes and the Sankirtan movement, then it may be like a gold plated box. Either way, it does not matter. Sanatana Goswami says he had the sores on his body and so forth. Mahaprabhu embraced him, and so it doesn't matter. Either way, their body is fully being used. So it can be depending on the Lord's grace or his past, particular pastime, his particular incarnation, maybe. I'm not sure.
So one clarification to what Murali Prabhu was saying, that the time has no effect on transcendental pastimes of the person is trying to do any spiritual activity. But Kulashekara in his prayers, he is saying that please take me away now because I am young and energetic. I am able to chant your name. I can see your glories. I can recite your glories. But when I become old, I will not be able to utter your name. First will be coming, my liver fails, my lungs fail, my throat fails, my eyes fail. How do you really reconcile this?
Yeah, so it means that the mood of King Kulashekara is, as we pointed out on Saturday night, that is the mood of the pure devotee. We should finish up our business in this lifetime. We should become Krishna conscious in this lifetime. That is the order of Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur. He expected that. So it means that King Kulashekara is in that mood. Take me now because I am young. Right? And my mind is absorbed now. He said, when I'm old, it would be harder for my mind to be absorbed. Because of the difficulties of old age. At the time of death, it is a very uncomfortable situation with the material body. Better if I go now while I'm young and fresh and my body is, my mind is more stable. But for the pure devotee, the point is the consciousness is fixed on Krishna. Even Srila Prabhupada, we saw when his body became very old in the last 6 months in Vrindavan, and he was bedridden, and his body was becoming very emaciated. But his consciousness remained clear and fixed on Krishna. So in other words, the pure devotion could not be stopped by the material circumstance. But the material body was not so fit anymore for devotional service. So King Kulashekara is saying, the point King Kulashekara is making is, be serious while you're young about Krishna consciousness. You know, because you know, often people say, our parents usually say to us, when you're old you can do this thing. You don't have to do it now. When you're old, yeah, this is for old people, spiritual life. Hare. Yeah. How do you know how old you are? We don't know how old we are. Not that song. Be serious now, that's the point. That's the mood of the devotees. Any other points?
Yeah.
First.
I had a question to you. In the purport of verse 6, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is telling Srila Rupa Goswami that out of all of these living entities, some may be influenced by the association of pure devotees and thus get the chance to execute devotional service by attainment of taste. This taste is the seed of devotional service. So, for the first stage of bhakti, Shraddha, no? The first thing we get is Shraddha, and taste actually comes very much later on. So, what is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
Yeah, that taste is deeper, that's all. That's Ruchi. That level of taste, which is after nishta, when the nathas are cleared, that taste is very powerful. That's like the fully manifest taste. But we have taste now. Why do we come to Bhagavatam class? Because some taste is there. Some pleasure is there in the activity. That is taste. So Prabhupada is saying that taste is given in the beginning by the guru. The seed is planted in the heart. But when the nathas are cleared, then the taste can fully manifest or become very powerful. The anattas block us from receiving the taste fully. Just like, say, the river is flowing, but if there is a dam, it cannot pass so easily like that. If there is obstacles or obstructions. So the anattas are like obstacles or instructions which obstruct our natural bhakti flowing towards Krishna. When the anattas are gone, that is anatta nivritti. One becomes nishta. From nishta, then ruchi develops. That means there is the obstacles cannot interfere with the flow of our bhakti so easily.
So, here the taste which is being taught about, which is the initial taste, that comes before Shraddha or after Shraddha?
That is Shraddha.
That is Shraddha.
Same thing. It means it is bhakti. It is the taste of the internal energy. It's contact with the internal energy. Shraddha means to have faith in the internal energy. That's what it means, faith. Everyone in the world has faith. Right? Some people have faith not to come to the Hare Krishna temple. They have faith that if I go somewhere else, I will get pleasure. Right? Just like we're doing Harinam, I think it was last week, and we're chanting up Collins Street. And we went past that hotel, I think it's called Novo Hotel. And we went past, and I saw the two bellboys are there at the front. And one of them looked at the other one and said, "Thank you." Like, look at these guys. You know, like, fruit. Right, so, like that. So his faith is in something else. You know, his faith, he thinks pleasure is somewhere else. Right? But for the devotee, his faith is in bhakti or devotional service. It's in contact. His faith is in the internal energy. And the more you advance, the more your faith becomes in the internal energy and less in the external energy. But for the non-devotees, their faith is in the external energy, not the internal energy. Like that. So, from the very beginning, your faith develops, that taste develops, and then ruchi means it becomes just absorbed in the internal energy. We're not absorbed yet, that's the point. Ruchi means absorption, like that. Just like, you know, we may go to Mangalati, or we may chant our rounds, or we may do different sadhana, different types of sadhana. But this is based on, to a certain degree, there's a certain amount of taste, but there's also a certain amount of fear of breaking the order of the spiritual master, for example. Right? But Prabhupada explains, ruchi means you must go. Yeah, you don't go to Mangalati because you have to, you must go because you want to see Radha Balabha. You cannot wait to see them. Prabhupada said, why 16 rounds? Why not 16,000 rounds? That's ruchi. That's ruchi. Ruchi means, you know, just chanting and chanting and chanting. That's ruchi. So we don't have that kind of absorption yet. We have some taste, but it's not fully manifest. Someone else had a question?
Usually the example of green mango and ripe mango is given. Mango is the same mango, but when it's green, then it gradually becomes ripe and succeeds.
Yeah, that's good.
It is said that Western people normally cannot do devotional service because of eating meat and things like that. And Eastern people cannot do devotional service because of their father. One is Pap, another is Bap. Western people are controlled by the Pap, and Eastern people are controlled by Bap. Because the father says, don't do now, when you are old, do it. That point you were telling, same thing. Bap and Pap.
Where did you get that one?
Somewhere.
That's a good one.
Okay. One clarification, Prabhu. Recently I saw a video in which it shows that Uddhava is a Jnani, and Lord Krishna sends Uddhava to meet gopis as a messenger and says that, look, they are really in, that they are just wandering everywhere as in search of me. Just give them some Jnana because you are a great Jnani. Then he said, that's not a problem, I'll represent you and go there and change their mood. But in the process, he becomes a great devotee by taking their dust. So is that video clipping incorrect or is that right, but it appears at a later
Well, that pastime is told in the Bhagavatam itself, okay. In the 10th canto. So if you read the Krishna book, then you'll get the pastime as it is told in the Bhagavatam. It's similar to that, but it's not exactly like that. It's not exactly like that. That's a little bit... it could be. It's either coming from a different Purana, possibly, or it's maybe a little speculative like that. But if you read the Bhagavatam and you read the Krishna book, it will tell you the pastime exactly as it takes place like that. So you read there and then you'll see. Okay. So, tonight I will tell you that secret that I've been telling you. I will tell you like that. So it is very interesting. It's not so much a secret, but it's about the where this particular conversation comes from in the history and so forth. It's very wonderful like that. So what took place is that Samba, who was the son of Krishna, this is told in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, they came before the sages and... while the sages were in Dwarka, or they may have been just outside Dwarka performing some sacrifice or something. And they were having some fun. They were young boys. And they dressed Sambar up as a girl, and as a pregnant girl. They put some cloth, they tied up some cloth and they put inside. And they came before the sages. And Sambar was very beautiful. Yeah. And they said to the sages, oh, great sages, please tell us, will this girl have a boy child or a girl child? Like that. So the sages became angry at that, because this is not the way to treat sages. Right? You don't go to very advanced Vaishnavas and be whimsical, play jokes like that. You have to be respectful. So at that time, they cursed. And they said, the child within the womb will be the destruction of your entire dynasty. Now normally the sages would not become angry, because these boys were the eternal associates of Krishna. They're Krishna's own children.
Yeah.
So great sages are not going to curse Krishna's children. But this was the Yogamaya potency of Krishna. Yogamaya was covering the sages to make them act angrily. Normally they would not do it. But they did it. They made the curse. It was just for the Lord's pastimes, like that. And actually it was for the appearance of the Bhagavatam. For the Bhagavatam to appear, we saw the pastime unveiled between Shukadeva and Parikshit. Right? The pastime Parikshit Maharaj being cursed. That was there. Why? So the Bhagavatam would be spoken. So similarly, this pastime is so the Bhagavatam would manifest. So this is how the Bhagavatam manifests. It's very wonderful and very amazing. So, Samba went back to Ugrasen, who was the in charge of the dynasty, the Yadu dynasty. And he said to King Ugrasen that we've been cursed by the sages. And when the boys took out the cloth, right, and they undid all the cloth, they found there was an iron ball, right, a ball of iron within the, and they became very fearful, this will destroy our dynasty. So they took it to King Ugrasen, and they said that this ball will destroy our dynasty. This is the curse given by the sages. So Ugrasen said, file it up. You know, file it, make it into powder, and throw it into the ocean at Dwarka, like that. So they filed it into powder and they threw it into the ocean, right? And then it washed down the ocean from Dwarka to Prabhas Chetra, which is down the coast from Dwarka, and it buried into the sand, and it grew as reeds of iron. Iron reeds came from the powder of this iron, and these iron reeds were later used by the Yadus to destroy each other in the fratricidal war. And then there was one piece left, because they were grinding, but as they grind there was one piece left, and they threw that also into the ocean. That was swallowed by a fish. And the fish was later caught by the fisherman and sold to the hunter, Jara. And that hunter, Jara, when he cut the fish open, he found that piece of iron left, and he made that into an arrowhead. And with that arrowhead he shot Krishna in the foot. So this was all the pastime which was taken, but it was all Krishna's arrangement like that. So then, after Samba had been cursed by the sages, not long after that, and after they threw everything, you read in the later cantos, the 11th canto, 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, then very inauspicious omens began to manifest in Dwarka. And that was not possible, because Dwarka is the eternal abode of the Lord. And not only is it the eternal abode of the Lord, but the Lord himself was personally present. So it was not natural or normal that inauspicious omens would take place. But they were seeing there was inauspicious omens. So everyone was becoming very fearful. What is going on? So Uddhava, because Uddhava is the most intelligent member of the Yadu dynasty. He is the disciple of Brihaspati. He's famous for his supernatural intelligence. So he approached Lord Krishna and he said, I think you're about to finish your pastimes. You're about to depart from earth. So Krishna told Uddhava confidentially, he said, yes, it is true. It is now time for me to finish my worldly pastimes. Uddhava said to Krishna that I cannot bear your separation. If you go, I also want to go. And Krishna said, because I'm very fearful, because I know when you depart, it means the beginning of the age of Kali. And when Kali Yuga begins, it's a very terrible, very horrible age. I do not want to be here. I do not want to be subject to the influence of the age of Kali. Because its age is very, the influence is very contaminated. Krishna said to him, he said, I want you to stay. I will depart now, but I want you to stay. You have a mission. And I will teach you something. And when I finish teaching you, I want you to go to Badrik Ashram in the Himalayas. And when you get to Badrik Ashram in the Himalayas, I want you to teach what I teach you to the sages who live there, the rishis who live there. And he said, you will not be affected by the age of Kali, because you'll be so absorbed in my mission that you will not be affected like that. So at that time, then Krishna spoke the Uddhava Gita to Uddhava at that time. That is found in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the instructions which Krishna gives to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam are very wonderful. And actually, we see that the Bhagavatam, from cantos 1 to 9, the content on the 9 different subject matters, the 10 different subject matters of the Bhagavatam are discussed. And then the 10th canto is the summa bonum, the Ashraya, where Krishna himself is discussed in great detail in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And then the 11th canto is like a summary of everything which is spoken previously. Krishna re-summarizes it. This is the Uddhava Gita, right, where he summarizes all the philosophy which is spoken previously in the Bhagavatam. He says it again. Just like in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does something similar like that. He gives some summary of what was spoken before. Nothing new was spoken, like a summary. So, Krishna, he speaks this Uddhava Gita to Uddhava at that time, and then Uddhava departs with a very heavy heart, feeling great separation from Krishna. So he begins to head east into central India, and then he's about to go up north to Badrikashram in the Himalayas. So he begins to travel, and at that time Krishna goes to all the members of the Yadu dynasty, and Krishna says to the members of the Yadu dynasty, there are very inauspicious omens in Dwarka. Now, I think that we should go to Prabhas Chetra and perform a jagya. And by this jagya, we can counteract the ill omens which are going on. Right? And in this way, we can make everything auspicious once again. So Ugrasen, King Ugrasen, and the different elders of the dynasty, they follow Krishna's advice. They said, very good. So they got in their boats and they travelled from Dwarka back to the mainland. And then they began to travel by chariot down to Prabhas Chetra. So all the men, all the members of the Yadu dynasty, they went with Krishna and Balaram down to Prabhas Chetra. And the women were taken to a place, I can't remember the name, but somewhere very close to Dwarka, like that. They were taken there, and also some elder members of the dynasty and so forth were taken there. So then they all went to Prabhas Chetra. And they, under Krishna's instruction, they performed great sacrifices, right? And they did many pious activities like that. And then, at the end of it, at the end of the sacrifice, they began to partake, as Kshatriyas are allowed to, they're sanctioned in the Shastra, they could partake in some rice wine. So they began to take some rice wine, and with the effect, they all became intoxicated. And then when they became intoxicated, they began to insult each other. This was Krishna's Yogamaya potency taking place. This is the only way that Krishna could remove his dynasty from the earth, because there was no one in the universe who could just destroy his own dynasty. They were too powerful, even the demigods. When they wanted to take the Sudama assembly hall from Indra, they went to the heavenly planets and they took the Sudama assembly hall. And at that time, the demigods attacked them. Indra and the other demigod, and they fought them all back. Kartikeya, Indra, I mean, most powerful demigods. And the Yadu dynasty fought them all back and took the Sudama assembly hall back to Dwarka and gave it to Krishna as an offering, as a gift. So there was no one in the universe who could challenge them. So Krishna had to arrange through Yogamaya that they would destroy themselves. So then they all began to fight. And they ran over to the, they smashed all their weapons to pieces and they fought each other very vigorously. And then they wanted something else to fight with, so they ran over to the reeds, the iron reeds which are growing at the beach, and they took those iron reeds and they began to kill each other. And smash each other and kill each other. This was all like Yogamaya. Factually, there's no death for the associates of Krishna, but it appeared that there's some pastime taking place. So they all killed each other. And everyone attacked, and they even attacked Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna and Balaram were killing them, and Satyaki was killing this one, and everyone was fighting. And in the end, everyone was dead. There was no one left. So this was all Krishna's arrangement. And then Balaram, from memory, he sat down in meditation on the shore of Dwarka, and it is said that from his mouth came Ananta Sesh and entered into the ocean. And then Lord Balaram entered somehow into the ocean as well, and then he disappeared. And that was the end of his manifest pastimes. So the only person left was Krishna. So Krishna went and sat underneath an ashwat tree, a banyan tree, a small banyan tree. Because this is the smallest universe within the creation, coming from the pores of this particular universe is small. So he sat with his back against a very small banyan tree, symbolically, because it is a small universe. So he came and sat at that time. And then Uddhava, who was traveling across India, then he had heard when the Yadavas left Dwarka to go to Prabhas, he heard from different sages and so forth that the Yadu dynasty have left to go to Prabhas to perform a yajna. So then he turned back to go back and see his relatives. So he travelled back to Prabhas Chetra. But by the time he arrived, right, just at the moment when Krishna sat down underneath the banyan tree, right, at that time Uddhava arrived at that very moment, right, and he sat down with Krishna and he said to Krishna, "You're about to depart this world. Right? Please give me instructions that I can give to your devotees and so forth." So then he spoke the third and fourth canto of the Bhagavatam at this time. This is the secret I wanted to tell you. Very ecstatic. So this time, Krishna spoke the third and fourth canto. And at that time, when he spoke to Uddhava, this transcendental knowledge, which is in the third and fourth canto, at that time, Maitreya Rishi came and he sat. And Uddhava and Krishna were sitting facing each other, and Maitreya Rishi was sitting on the side. Because at that time, he was not a pure devotee. He was some jnana mishra. He was like a jnani. Some mixing of jnana was there. But after hearing the third and fourth canto spoken by Krishna, because in third and fourth canto, Krishna speaks about pure devotional service. At the end of the third canto in Kapila's teachings, he speaks of pure devotional service. So at that time, by hearing the third and fourth canto, Maitreya also became purified. He also became a pure devotee. So then Krishna instructed Uddhava and instructed Maitreya, and then he asked them to depart, so they departed. And then Krishna began to meditate, and then the hunter came and shot him in the foot. And then Krishna finished his pastimes. He left an earthly shell, a material form, and then he went to the next universe to perform his future pastimes like that. So then Uddhava travelled back towards central India, and he got to the bank of the Jamuna, and at that time he met Vidura. And this is the exact moment we're at now in the Bhagavatam. Vidura and Uddhava have just met on the bank of the Jamuna, somewhere in India. I can't remember the exact place. But they meet there, and then we see after a few chapters, then Uddhava instructs Vidura, because Vidura is senior in age to Uddhava, but Uddhava says to Vidura, he says, "Please instruct me," and he says, "No, I will not instruct you because you are senior to me. Please go and hear from Maitreya." He also heard this final conversation that Krishna spoke like this. He also heard this final instructions from Lord Krishna himself. Please go to him. So then he goes to him and he meets you in Hardwar, which is in India. What is the name of that place in India? Still called Hardwar. Rishikesh? Yeah, Rishikesh, Hardwar. Same place. So at that place, then Maitreya and Vidura spoke. And then Uddhava continued on his pilgrimage to Bhadrakashram. And he instructed the sages in what he had heard from Krishna at that time, and then he departed, he went back to Godhead, same as all the other members of the dynasty. So this was the secret that was.
Just one statement.
Yeah.
The hunter who shot the arrow to Krishna's toe was Wali in his previous birth.
Yeah.
And he took the other turn, because he said, Wali said, he was given the promise that next time when I'm here, you can shoot me.
Yeah. I shot you so you can get me back. So then he appeared in that. Yeah.
So can I ask you something? During Rama's pastime, it means that people who wanted to depart with Rama from Ayodhya, they went back with the material forms back to Vaikuntha. But why from in Krishna's pastime that they have to kill each other, you know?
Because there was no other way for Krishna's dynasty to be removed from the earth. It was Krishna's desire. It was like he's part of a pleasure pastime.
So they were suffering
too? No, there's no suffering. Actually, it's we'll see as we go through the next few chapters. Prabhupada actually explains it's like an illusion. Like, you know, when a magician does an illusion? Just like I saw one time, oh, many times, you watch like David Copperfield, or one of the great magicians, and they do very amazing tricks. Like, they make elephants disappear on stage, and very amazing tricks, but you know it's an illusion. You know it's not real. It's some trick, isn't it? So it's explained that when the Yadu dynasty, it was just like a...
They were not in the consciousness.
That, but it was like a vision. It's just like something in this world for people to look at and see. But actually they were not fighting and killing each other. It was just like Krishna's yoga maya prophecy. It was so, at the end of his pastimes, they could say, okay, now everything is gone. And Dwarka sinks into the sea and all these things take place. And then Krishna gets shot by the hunter. And then he leaves a material form. So then the material form is also for the materialists. They can say, see, he was just an ordinary person. Like that. But he's not an ordinary person. Prabhupada discusses this tonight. Devotees never, you know, it doesn't matter what they say. We know Krishna is not like that.
Krishna
goes to
the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty because Kandali cursed the Yadavas because all her family was destroyed. So she cursed Krishna, all his family, to kill each other. So he said, oh, fine, I was just thinking how I will withdraw my members of the family, so he did that.
He did that, yeah. Yeah, that was the arrangement.
Uddhava Gita is not given prominence in ISKCON. Is there any reason for that? It's not among the main literature that we study.
Well, it's part of the Bhagavatam. Part of the Bhagavatam. Okay. The Bhagavatam is given prominence because it's Prabhupada's main literary work. His life's work was to complete the Bhagavatam. So, in that sense, it is given prominence. When you read the commentaries by the previous acharyas, very often when they quote verses to support, many times they quote the 11th canto, those verses, because those verses are very amazing. Yeah. Like, you know, Krishna's teachings in the 11th canto, they almost go on to another level. You know, I mean, when Krishna starts speaking jnana and starts speaking, it's amazing that 11th canto, what's in there. So it is given prominence in that sense, but maybe it's not. Because it's part of the Bhagavatam. It's not kind of singled out. You know, because it's part of the Bhagavatam is given prominence, and it's part of the Bhagavatam like that. So maybe in that way it's prominent. But it's very amazing like that. I think in about 2022 we should start. If we keep going at the pace we're going.
Such a long blessing for the womb.
Yeah. See if we're all still around. Okay, so now we'll begin. Tonight we'll do verses 7 to 15. And Uddhava begins to speak to Vidura. Gives him a very nectarian instructions about Lord Krishna. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Vidura, the sun of the world, Lord Krishna has set, and our house has now been swallowed by the great snake of time. What can I say to you about our welfare?" Jogi, do you want to read?
The disappearance of the Krishna sun may be explained as follows. According to the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Vidura was struck with great sorrow when he got the hint of the annihilation of the great Yadu dynasty as well as of his own family, the Kuru dynasty. Uddhava could understand the grief of Vidura, and therefore he first of all wanted to sympathize with him by saying that after the sunset everyone is in darkness. Since the entire world was merged in the darkness of grief, neither Vidura nor Uddhava nor anyone else could be happy. Uddhava was as much aggrieved as Vidura, and there was nothing further to be said about their welfare. The comparison of Krishna to the sun is very appropriate. As soon as the sun sets, darkness automatically appears. But the darkness experienced by the common man does not affect the sun itself, either at the time of sunrise or of sunset. Lord Krishna's appearance and disappearance are exactly like that of the sun. He appears and disappears in innumerable universes. And as long as he is present in a particular universe, there is all transcendental light in that universe. But the universe from which he passes away is put into darkness. His pastimes, however, are everlasting. The Lord is always present in some universe, just as the sun is present in either the eastern or the western hemisphere. The sun is always present either in India or in America. But when the sun is present in India, the American land is in darkness. And when the sun is present in America, the Indian hemisphere is in darkness. As the sun appears in the morning and gradually rises to the meridian and then again sets in one hemisphere, while simultaneously rising in the other, so Lord Krishna's disappearance in one universe and the beginning of his different pastimes in another take place simultaneously. As soon as one pastime is finished here, it is manifested in another universe. And thus his Nitya Leela or eternal pastimes are going on without ending. As the sunrise takes place once in 24 hours, similarly the pastimes of Lord Krishna take place in a universe once in a daytime of Brahma, the account of which is given in the Bhagavad Gita as
4.3 billion
solar years. But wherever the Lord is present, all his different pastimes as described in the revealed scriptures take place at regular intervals. As at sunset, the snakes become powerful, thieves are enraged, ghosts become active, the lotus becomes disfigured, and the chakravaki laments. So with the disappearance of Lord Krishna, the atheists feel enlivened and the devotees become sorry.
So what are the points here?
Talks about the verse Krishna hai surya sama maya hai. And another analogy is the Isopanishad. The analogy is given, the Lord is the sun, the Lord is like Shuktam. The Lord doesn't get contaminated. So even though there is darkness, the darkness doesn't affect the Lord itself, but it's Shuktam.
Nice reference. Any other points?
And this is not directly related to the text, but it's really wonderful that Krishna has designed this universe so that so many simple analogies could be drawn to his eternal pastimes and to certain aspects of his personality so we can relate to the world around us and directly associate with him, even in our mind.
Could you please explain how Chakravaki bird is lamenting at the time of sunset?
Anyone else? Prabhupada doesn't explain it yet, so I'm not sure.
Chakravaki is a bird which cries for rain.
Chataka bird.
Chataka
bird. It's called a Chataka bird. It pursues the raindrops for pure water. It drinks only pure water.
Chakravaki.
It doesn't drink water that has touched the ground.
Yeah, there's different birds. There's one that lives off the moon beams, and there's one that only drinks the water that falls from the cloud. It doesn't drink the water on the ground. So there's two different birds. I'm not sure which one is which. So it sounds like the one that is lamenting because there's no rain. He only drinks the water that comes from the rain, from the clouds. That's what it sounds like.
Sort of, and then they make mournful sounds during the night. That's just what the glossary says.
It also says that when they're separated, they mourn at night. But that's another good analogy.
Okay, so that's what it means. Yeah. So Jack is lamenting because it's separated from its friends. Okay. So this is the nature of the pure devotee. The pure devotee feels the great lamentation when Krishna has left this world. Now this seems to be like a paradox, or seems to be like a How do you say it?
Irony?
Irony? Yeah. Irony? Contradiction? Yeah. No. I think it's a particular word of the deal, but like paradox. It means, yeah, like contradictory thing. That the pure devotee is feeling great separation from Krishna. But we've just heard that Uddhava was actually associating with Krishna in his consciousness. Mm-hmm. But in the pastimes here, that when Krishna disappears, the devotees naturally feel great separation from Krishna. But then in another sense, there is no separation from Krishna, because these are eternal associates. So they feel that pain and that separation as part of the Lord's Leela and pastime. But in another sense, they're always with Krishna. So just like the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just like when Raghunath Das Goswami, he felt when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world and went back into his eternal pastimes, he felt like he wanted to give up his life. He was feeling so much separation from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But then on another level, he's an eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But still, because they're swept up in the pastimes, or they're so attached to the Lord, and they have so much love, and the Lord's pastimes are so human-like in this, and when he appears in this world and so forth, then they feel that separation. But on another platform, there's no separation for them. What's that? Yeah, that mood is there. And this is because the Lord's pastimes are eternal. So Krishna does not disappear. Uddhava is making this point. Right? Krishna is like the sun. Right? And the sun may disappear from our vision, just like now we cannot see the sun. But Prabhupada points out the sun is fully manifest. Right? In another part of the world. If you're in India right now, the sun is fully manifest. Is it?
Yep.
Yeah.
I just couldn't remember which way the world's going.
We are ahead.
We are ahead. We're always ahead. Okay. And Fiji is number one. Okay. So, in terms of in India right now, the sun is fully manifest. Right? But in our situation, we cannot take advantage of the sun right now. But the sun is not diminished in any way in its potency. Don't just simply manifest or unmanifest. So Krishna in his pastime, sometimes he's manifest, sometimes he's unmanifest, but he is fully potent at all times. And his pastimes are just going on in different universes. Prabhupada says, just like the travelling roadshow, just like the circus. And the circus comes, sets up, big event, right? Everything packs down, goes to the next place, again. Circus is existing. Right? But just simply moving around. So Krishna is like that. Right? Sometimes goes to another universe. Right? But his pastimes are fully manifest. But for the devotees who are left behind in this world, they feel great anxiety, great grief from being separated from Krishna. So Uddhava is understanding what Vidura is feeling. So he's speaking in this way. He's trying to console him in the beginning. But on another level, there's no separation, because Uddhava has just come literally from Krishna's association in Dwarka, just literally brought his consciousness back to him. But still, these feelings are there. So it is not that the devotees do not feel real feelings towards the Lord. Right? And we should not think that, the devotees are just thinking, well, you know, we know that Krishna is supreme, we know that he's always existing, you know, we know he's just going to the next year. No, they feel this separation. Right? They relish feeling this because they love Krishna. And because Krishna's pastimes are human-like, then they have these human-like emotions which are with it. So it's not false. The feeling's not false. It's not that, you know, it's just for pastime's sake, oh, they're going along with Krishna and they're pretending to cry. No, they're feeling like that. And this is the way that the body will feel. Okay. So it should not be taken as something that's... Okay. Because otherwise, sometimes, you know, people try to explain philosophically. You know, philosophically, oh, there's no... It's just like, you know, Srila Prabhupada, for example. So Srila Prabhupada has disappeared. So philosophically, we know Prabhupada is not gone. We know philosophically, we know Prabhupada is eternally existing. philosophically, we know Prabhupada is with Krishna right now. But still, that doesn't remove any of the feeling, right, of the separation the devotee feels from Prabhupada. It doesn't really, it's, you know, and you don't say, well, that's false, or that's not real, or that's just material emotion. No, it's spiritual emotion. Right? Even though we know, philosophically, we know within our mind, Prabhupada is there, but still the feeling is intense, and that's not false. So it should not be looked upon like that. Just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the mundane emotion should be rejected. Right? Krishna instructs us, reject mundane emotion. Mundane attachment should be rejected. Right? But in the same way, Krishna's, in his pastimes, there's so much spiritual emotion. So it should not be compared to mundane emotion. Okay, mundane emotion should be given up. We should be dhira, we should be sober. Give up mundane, you know, should not, Krishna says, do not lament. Right? While speaking learned words, you are lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief. Right? So Krishna is saying there, do not lament for the material. Right? But when it comes to spiritual emotion, that should not be rejected. You know, we should not think, oh, you know, spiritual life means dhira. It means just the devotees are very sober. Right? And they just go along for some pastimes of Krishna. They cry and Krishna cries. But everyone, no, the feeling is there. Because they're persons. Right? So it should be understood that it's in a spiritual context. But it's a little bit hard to understand because in another sense, there's no separation from Krishna. Because Uddhava is eternally associating with Krishna in Dwarka. But then the feelings are there and they are real. So it has to be reconciled. It's inconceivable, but does it make sense?
But how do you separate these two emotions in a person? How do you identify which one is spiritual, which is mundane in a person? Is a person experiencing, say, the departure of his father?
Yeah.
Then is it mundane, or if the father happens to be a devotee also, then is it spiritual, or both are mixed there?
Yeah, so then it comes down to whether the relationship is based on the internal energy or the external energy.
Well, if the father can do both also.
True, but if the father is a devotee and if he's a guiding one in Krishna consciousness, then the relationship is the internal energy. And it is different. It is different. Just like one of my brothers left his body when I was 15. Now one of my younger brothers, he left this world. So there was great pain there. And even now I feel something, some pain like that. But then tomorrow Krishnamurti has left this world also. And the pain I feel towards him leaving and my brother leaving, it is different.
Yeah.
Like I've analysed this within my heart, within my mind, it is different. Because one is in the one relationship is based on the external energy. And one is based on the internal energy. So the lamentation is different. And the feeling is different. One is real and the other one is based on external attachments.
The relationship to a brother is different to a relationship with a parent.
No, but you're understanding the meaning? So, okay, say my father disappeared. One is guru, that means spiritual father. One is mundane father. Same thing, right? Both a father, like that. Both a parent. Vatsalya Ras. But one is internal, one is external. Right, so then it has to be seen in that respect.
So when you say mundane, you mean relating to materialistic objects, particularly.
It means the relationship. The relationship. If the relationship with the family is not based on Krishna consciousness, then it is considered to be mundane. It is material.
Okay.
Related to the body, right? And the point is that attachment is the nature of the soul. Attachment is the nature of the soul. Right? But when you come to this material world, you become attached to material relationships. Now, if you go back one lifetime, right, your previous lifetime, the one just before this, means you're in a different body. Which for most of us say, you know, devotees here in their 40s or in their 30s, so it's only, if you go back 50 years for most devotees, right, you're in a different body. And the attachment you had to your mother and father in that birth, right, was very powerful. But now you're in this birth, and you had this mother and father. If someone showed you a photo or gave you knowledge of your previous mother, you had no feeling at all. But 50 years ago, the pain was intense. Yeah, the attachment was so strong. Now it's all gone. So do you understand? That is illusion. That is Maya. That is attempt. That is the external energy. Whereas the relationship with the devotees, that is the internal energy, because those relationships continue after death. There will be a bhakti by bhava in the spiritual world shake-up.
No, why? Because I do not want to extend the time, but I find, I've read books and I've known people through newspapers, when they were introduced to their previous birth parents, they are once again the same pain, the same association they were seeking with the when they are alive. So therefore I'm trying to think in my mind...
So the point is that, I mean, my explanation was clear. So that was, it made everything clear.
Like
That is the philosophy. Yeah.
So it should be. Father Arya, which mother Arya, when he becomes alive, they bring back his life. He asks, which father are you? Which mother are you? So completely changed. So there's no feeling.
I remember I came home to my mother when I was 19, and I came home and I said to her, I'm going to join the Hare Krishnas. Right. And she just completely freaked out. Completely. Like, what is this? What is this? And she preached to me for 1 week. Do not join the temple. You know, do not join this temple. Do not join this Hare Krishna temple. I'll never see you on this thing. And then I remember one time I was sitting there on the kitchen bench, sitting on the stool, the kitchen bench, and she was in the kitchen and she was saying to me, and I said, you know, I said to her, like, you know, that why should I follow what you say? And she was like shocked, you know. She said, because I am your mother. Right? And I just read that pastime. And I said, which mother are you? And she just freaked out. She was like, what is this? What is this?
She knew that you would be elected.
It's very funny. I can't believe I said that. We do some wild things when we're young. Okay. This universe, with all its planets, is most unfortunate. And even more unfortunate are the members of the Yadu dynasty. Because they could not identify Lord Hari as the personality of Godhead any more than the fish could identify the moon. Mahamaji, can you...
First paragraph?
Yeah.
Uddhava lamented for the unfortunate persons of the world who could not recognize Lord Sri Krishna in spite of seeing all his transcendental godly qualities. From the very beginning of his appearance within the prison bars of King Kansa up to his Mausala Leela, although he exhibited his potencies as the personality of Godhead in the six opulences of wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge and sensation, the foolish persons of the world could not understand that he was the Supreme Lord. Foolish persons might have thought him an extraordinary historic figure because they had no intimate touch with the Lord. But more unfortunate were the family members of the Lord, the members of the Yadu dynasty who were always in company with the Lord but were unable to recognize him as Supreme Personality. Uddhava lamented his own for fortune also, because although he knew Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he could not properly use the opportunity to render devotional service to the Lord. He regretted everyone's misfortune, including his own. The pure devotee of the Lord thinks himself most unfortunate. That is due to the excessive love for the Lord and is one of the transcendental perceptions of Viraha, the suffering of separation.
So any points here?
So how come he could not use properly the opportunity to render devotional service when it was mentioned that due to performing devotional service the mother will call him but he will not answer? So it's a bit...
Yeah. So what it's saying there, and Prabhupada does explain it, it means this is how he is feeling. So the pure devotee feels I've not served Krishna perfectly or Krishna purely. That's how the pure devotee is feeling. Right? He does his service for Krishna, but he's always feeling there was some lacking on his behalf. In other words, he hasn't served Krishna as well as he should have, or as perfectly as he should have, or with enough devotion as he should have. Okay, so it's meaning like this. That's what it means. That's what it means. The way Prabhupada is writing, you have to read it a few times. But this is what he's meaning. It's not that Uddhava was unfortunate, or he did miss any opportunity, or not that he did not take the opportunity, but he's feeling afterwards that he's feeling I'm lacking. You know, I could have. Yeah, devotees always feel like that. We always feel like, oh, we could have done better. Yeah, we always feel like, oh, the service could have been nicer. We feel like, oh, I could have put more devotion. So even a pure devotee is feeling like that. So that is his sentiment. Not that there's actually a lacking on his behalf.
Also, it's literally confusing. Later it was mentioned that they saw the Supreme Lord as the super soul. But maybe when we come up to the palace.
Yeah, that's in the next. Yeah, on that. So here, Uddhava is explaining that many people, they could not understand Krishna's position. And this is mentioned by Prabhupada in other places in the in his purports, that Duryodhana, for example, he could not understand Krishna's position, even though Krishna came before him and he personally saw Krishna face to face. Even though he saw Krishna directly before him, but he could not understand who Krishna was or what Krishna was. So this is the most unfortunate position. That they directly have contact with the Lord themselves, but they cannot take advantage. And you'll see sometimes, like I know sometimes we used to have school groups used to come to the temple. And they come into the temple and you have 100 children there and the doors open. And they look at the deities like that. But some of them you can see there's just no ability to perceive the Lord is present. Even though they're seeing the form and the Lord himself is physically present before them. But they cannot perceive it. So this is the most unfortunate position. So Prabhupada points out, why is this there? Right? This is because of impiety. Prabhupada explains in this section. Right? It's because people are impious. In other words, they're performing activities which bind them to the material bodily concept of life. Eating meat, having illicit sex, taking intoxication, and gambling. So these particular activities bind one to the bodily concept of life. And they make one very unfortunate that they cannot realize Krishna. Right? But the devotee, he's most fortunate because the devotee can perceive Krishna. But Uddhava here is, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, Uddhava is feeling unfortunate. He's feeling, I am unfortunate because I had Krishna's association but I did not take full advantage. Right? And that is natural.
Humility,
yeah. And that is natural, right? We feel, just like the spiritual master will come, he'll stay for a few days, and then when he leaves, the devotees feel, I did not take enough advantage. Even though you may have given 100%, but still you feel like, I did not take enough advantage. I did not serve him well enough. Even though you may have given 100%, but still you're feeling like that. That's natural. So even a pure devotee will feel like that. So he's feeling unfortunate, but it's not actually... In one sense, it's not actually unfortunate. It's just on his behalf, he's feeling that kind of mood.
Can I ask a question?
If it's quick, because I have to.
Yeah. The demigods knew that Krishna is appearing, so therefore they have taken birth in the Yadu dynasty.
Yeah.
Similarly, when Lord Rama appeared, they took the birth as monkeys to serve the Lord. So in the monkey's form, they knew that he was the Lord, so therefore they served nicely. And here also, because they knew that the Lord was appearing, they appeared in the dynasty. But how is that then they could not recognize that Lord?
Yeah, so we'll explain that in the next verse, because Prabhupada, he explains that, what this point means. The Yadus were all experienced devotees, learned and expert in psychic study. Over and above this, they were always with the Lord in all kinds of relaxations. And still, They were only able to know him as the one supreme who dwells everywhere. So does it sound like there's anything wrong with that?
Impersonal. He dwells supreme, who dwells everywhere.
Well, there's no impersonalism because they're the Lord's eternal associates. So then there's no impersonalism.
It doesn't go beyond Aishwarya?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, I never understood.
Yeah, so this is the point. The point is, as Glenn has mentioned, Uddhava here, Uddhava was sent by Krishna, as we read in the 10th canto. He was sent by Krishna to Vrindavan. So what's taking place here is that Uddhava is comparing even the members of the Yadu dynasty, which includes himself, with the residents of Vrindavan. Because compared to them, they really did not understand the Lord fully. If you read the purports, Prabhupada explains it. In the sense that in Vrindavan, as Prabhupada says here, in Vrindavan, however, the Lord was not even known as the Paramatma because the residents of Vrindavan were pure, unconventional devotees of the Lord and could think of him only as their object of love. That is the highest understanding, or the highest level of Bhagavan realization, is the realization of the Vrijvasis towards Krishna, because they only see Krishna as their friend, as their son, or as their lover. That is the only way they can see Krishna. They cannot see him in any other way, and that is the most perfect state of God realization. It is the most perfect state of Krishna consciousness, and compared to anything else, Uddhava is comparing even Prabhupada says, even the Yadus, who are his own family members, his eternal associates, but still there's some understanding of his supremacy. And there's still an understanding that he is the Paramatma. But the Vrijvasis don't think of him like that. They don't think he's the Paramatma. Right? Nanda Maharaj, sometimes the other devotees in Vrindavan, they say to Nanda Maharaj, you have to be careful the way you speak to your son. Because don't you understand, you know, it has been said by Gargaracharya, he may even be the Supreme Lord, right? He may be some great demigod of the Supreme Lord. And Nanda Maharaj says, all I know is that my son cannot control his tongue. All I know, right, is my son is a liar. Right? He's a compulsive liar, he's always telling stories. And all that I know is that when the thunder claps at night time, he runs into my bed scared and jumps under my sheets. So I cannot think that he is a great demigod, or I cannot think things like that. And then everyone just laughs and they say, yeah, that is ridiculous. He's just Krishna. So this is the highest level of God realization. Why? Because the love of the Vrijvasis is the most complete, is the most intense. Right? And when Uddhava, when you read in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when Uddhava, when Narad Muni was looking for the best devotee, everyone knows the pastime? Narad Muni was looking for the best devotee? I'll tell it another time. Yeah, Gopakumar, but there's also Narada also there. I'll tell it another time in detail. But Narada went to all the devotees and they all said, no, I'm not the best devotee. But when he came to Uddhava, Uddhava said, I thought I was the best devotee. Not proud, but he just thought, I didn't think there was anyone else who loved Krishna more than me. But then Krishna sent me to Vrindavan. And when I went to Vrindavan, I realized, no love. He said, compared to them, he said, nothing. So this is the resonance of Vrindavan. So this is what's going on here. Because Uddhava is about to explain, in the next class we'll see, he explains about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. He remembers Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And this is like the beginning of the Bhagavatam in one sense. The third canto is like the beginning of the Bhagavatam in one sense. And it is leading to the 10th canto. Because the Bhagavatam is only about Krishna. Right? The first two cantos, right, were preparing us. Right? They were all in connection to Krishna. The first canto said, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. Right? Second canto is also leading us to Krishna consciousness, Krishna realization. This is pointed out in the Chatur Shloki as well, like that. And the Ashraya is about Krishna like that. So it indicates that. And then the third canto and fourth canto, as we said in the beginning of the class, the third canto and the fourth canto are spoken by Krishna. Right? The 11th canto is spoken by Krishna. All the other cantos are describing Krishna's incarnations, who are simply his expansions. And the 10th canto, which is the biggest part of the Bhagavatam, is just about Krishna. So the Bhagavatam is about Krishna. So this is what has been indicated here by Uddhava. He is indicating that the love of the residents of Vrindavan, the way they love Krishna, this brings out Krishna's most complete form. Of that. This brings out Vrindavan Krishna, which is his most complete manifestation of Godhead. Right? He's the most full manifestation of Godhead.
So, probably in this case, can we say that then there are two stages of Paramatma realization? One which Dhruva Maharaj realized during meditation, and one where this analogy has been given, that the Yadus knew Lord as the super soul. So are there two levels within that?
Yes.
Yeah, or they understand Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabjati. So they have Bhagavan realization. So they understand the Paramatma's relationship with Bhagavan. Like that. So it depends on, and also someone like Dhruva Maharaj is meditating on the Paramatma within the heart, but he understands this is Bhagavan, manifest within the heart. You know, as opposed to thinking Paramatma is the complete realization of God. Right, that is a secondary. If someone thinks that Paramatma is the supreme manifestation of the supreme, then that's incomplete realization.
So is that the revelation
which
you
have?
No.
The Yadus understand that Krishna is they understand that Krishna is the source of Paramatma. That's the way they see him.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is Prabhupada's making, in Vrindavan they don't think of him like that. They just think he is Krishna. Mm-hmm. That's all. And Prabhupada's saying that this is the highest level of God realization. Okay. I'll have to keep moving just because we have to finish the verses. Under no circumstances can the words of persons bewildered by the illusory energy of the Lord deviate the intelligence of those who are completely surrendered souls. Mm. So Prabhupada points out that the atheists can say so many things about Krishna. They write books about Krishna, they write commentaries on Krishna's Bhagavad Gita, and they say so many things about Krishna, that he is not supreme. But it doesn't mean anything for the devotees. Right? If they say Krishna is not supreme, or Krishna is just a historical figure, or Krishna is mythology, or Dwarka is just mythology, or any of it, for us it doesn't mean anything. Because for the devotees in their heart, they're just convinced, full faith, that Krishna is supreme, that Lord Rama is supreme, and everything in the pastimes is literal, it's not mythology. If it says Dwarka floated on the ocean, Dwarka floated on the ocean. Right? It says if Rama built a bridge across the Lanka, Rama built a bridge across the Lanka. Right? If it says this and it says that, it's all true. That's how the devotee feels. Lord Sri Krishna, who manifested his eternal form before the vision of the earth, of all on earth, performed his disappearance by removing his form from the sight of those who are unable to see him as he is, due to not executing required penance. So Prabhupada points out here that the non-devotees, they feel, or the non-devotees cannot understand Krishna because of impiety, right? And that is the lack of qualification. So therefore, that is the necessity, as Krishna says in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in this 28th verse, that one can only begin to understand Krishna when one has become pious or washed of all sins. And you can only fully understand Krishna when you are washed of all sins. Right? As long as there's some sinful desire within the heart, then Krishna cannot fully manifest in your heart. Right? Because all the sinful desire has to be removed, then Krishna can be fully manifest. If some attachment is there to sin within the heart, then Krishna cannot manifest fully within the consciousness.
In 7.25, he also said, I'll never manifest a felicia.
The verse before, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah, 23.
Very good. So in this purport, it says that Lord Krishna left in his own body, did not leave his body.
Did not what?
leave his material body behind. When he disappeared, he left in that body only.
He left in that body, but he left a material form behind for the atheists. This is told in the... You'll see in the next few chapters. You'll see in the next few chapters it comes up. It mentions it like that. Okay. The Lord appeared in the mortal world by his internal potency, Yogamaya. He came in his eternal form, which is just suitable for his pastimes. These pastimes are wonderful for everyone, even for those proud of their own opulence, including the Lord himself in his form of the Lord, as the Lord of Vaikuntha. Thus his, Sri Krishna's transcendental body, is the ornament of all ornaments. So Prabhupada points out in the purport that even Narayan was attracted to the opulence of Krishna. So once again, this is identifying Krishna's pastimes, and not just Krishna's pastimes, but Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, are the supremely opulent display of Godhead. Because what Krishna did in Vrindavan, the opulence surpassed the pastimes of any other incarnation, and even his pastimes outside of Vrindavan. So therefore it was the full manifestation of God. And if you read in the 10th canto, where these pastimes are actually described, and you read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries, then you will see it proves that these pastimes were more opulent than even the pastimes in Vaikuntha or the pastimes in Dwarka. The pastimes in Vrindavan were most opulent. But even though the devotees in Vrindavan experienced the full manifestation of Krishna's opulence, no one there became bewildered by Krishna's opulence. Everyone just thought, he is Krishna. That's all they thought. He is my friend, he is my lover, he is my son. That's all they thought. Even though they're experiencing unlimited opulence. This will come out more and more as we study the Bhagavad Gita. All the demigods from the upper, lower, middle, universal planetary systems assembled at the altar of the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhishthira. After seeing the beautiful bodily features of Lord Krishna, they all contemplated that he was the ultimate dexterous creation of Brahma, the creator of human beings. So Prabhupada points out this is incomplete knowledge. Because the devotees did not think that Lord Brahma, who was also present at that sacrifice, the devotees there did not think that Brahma has created Krishna. They understand Krishna created Brahma. But for some of the demigods and so forth, they thought, no, Krishna has been created by Brahma, and this is the most beautiful thing he created. It actually is the other way around. The damsels of Braj. Now this is interesting, right? Because this is Uddhava remembering the gopis. Because he went to Vrindavan and he met the gopis. Krishna sent him to Vrindavan to meet the gopis. And now he's remembering the gopis' love for Krishna. Now this is opening up what will come in the future in the Bhagavatam. Like that. This is what the Bhagavatam is actually all about. This is like the Rahasya, Sarahasya. This is the deepest part of the Bhagavatam. The 10th canto. The damsels of Braj, after pastimes of laughter, humour and exchanges of glances, were anguished when Krishna left them. They used to follow him with their eyes, and thus they sat down with stunned intelligence and could not finish their household duties. So if you read the purport, it explains the love of the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis, for Krishna. The personality of Godhead, the all-compassionate controller of both the spiritual and material creations, is unborn. But when there is friction between his peaceful devotees and persons who are in the material modes of nature, he takes birth just like fire, accompanied by the Mahat Tattva. So it is mentioned here that the reason Krishna appears in this material world is to destroy the demoniac personalities. But actually, Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 4th chapter, when Krishna speaks this verse, Prabhupada explains the main reason why Krishna comes is to attract everyone back to Godhead by his pastimes. Right? Paritranaya Satuna, to attract the pious. To destroy the demons, Krishna does not need to come to do that personally. Krishna can send his incarnations to destroy the demons. Or he can send his empowered devotees to destroy the demons, like Bhima or Arjuna. He doesn't need to do any of that himself. The main reason Krishna comes is to attract everyone back to Godhead. And especially for us, as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose most merciful appearance day, Gaura Purnima, is on Sunday. For us who are followers of Mahaprabhu, right, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, then especially there is great emphasis, and that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially was attracted to him in the Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam, especially beyond any other scripture, establishes the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan as being the supreme display and manifestation of God's internal pleasure potency. The pastimes between Srimati Radharani and her associates and Lord Krishna and the other residents of Vrindavan is the supreme state of ecstatic manifestation of Krishna and Krishna's internal potency. So this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was completely absorbed in. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was completely absorbed in the Srimad Bhagavatam in terms of the rahasya, or the deepest, most secretive part of the Bhagavatam, Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. And that was the entire purpose of this incarnation of Krishna, to appear as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to relish that mood of love of God between the residents of Vrindavan and Lord Krishna. And the external reason was to propagate the Yuga Dharma like that. So we'll hear more about that this week as we approach. So this is the most auspicious day for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the Gaura Purnima, which is coming, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance day. So we should begin to prepare our consciousness this week for celebrating that day with full devotion. And because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Patita Pavana, which means he's the most merciful incarnation, right? He's in the mood of Srimati Radharani, right? So he is in the mood of compassion. So you can approach him, and he is so merciful. He will overlook all of your faults. And it is pointed out that if you approach him simply with humility and simply with the mood that I am unqualified, but still I desire your service, then he will give you unlimited blessings and facility. Okay. Brantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. Gopri Mahaprabhu.